It is perhaps not too much to say that the best time for a ghost story is Christmas Eve. M.R. James. Welcome to Grimly.
Recording.
Check one. What the whistle? What the whistle?
It's been a minute since we warmed up.
New York.
Unique New York.
That is hard.
That's very hard. I don't like that.
I don't like it. But it's, I mean, I guess it's good on the enunciation.
I know, look at that. We tried to do some low lighting.
Mood lighting.
Some mood lighting.
Have we ever thought about the overhead light on this podcast? I don't think
so. No, because we didn't do video.
Okay. Yeah. Overhead lighting is a problem because you want to be able to see what you're doing. And I would rather we didn't see what we were doing.
And I would rather I never see your fucking face.
Or mine. God forbid my reflection. Like I just need a spotlight over whatever I'm doing, which is usually just cooking.
Right.
And then vibing. I don't need to see the bowl to eat.
No. The joke is that Meg is scared of vampires because she is a vampire and she hates the light.
I like daylight, which is the antithesis of vampire.
That's true.
It's an overhead light. I don't know. This is probably like autism spectrum thing.
Am I? What's wrong with me?
Lots of people have a sensory issue, but this is very moody.
Yes. Yes. We made like a little makeshift lantern. We got a lava lamp on. We got some other like string lights going.
It is super fun.
We're trying to create a vibe here.
I'm already having a great time.
Okay, that's good. I mentioned that the last two episodes of the year are more of like a fun campfire story, like mood light.
Oh, fun. Okay.
Type of vibe instead of like us, you know, and regular.
Yeah, I don't want to be in regular light ever.
I know. That's the point.
Welcome to Grimly.
Welcome to Grimly.
Hi. This is where we tell the stories.
We are two unserious people that talk about seriously creepy shit. We've had dinner and a bottle of wine.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're becoming drunk history.
Do you think, how much do they drink?
A lot.
They do? Do they drink hard
Have you
liquor?
Ever watched Drunk History?
Yes.
Yeah, they drink a lot of liquor.
Liquor.
Those people are like blacked out.
Well, damn.
Honestly, okay. God bless them.
Wow. Okay. It is brave.
It is brave. It's funny as hell, though. That was like one of my favorite TV shows. I wish it was still on.
I love it.
A, I learned shit from that show. And B, I laughed.
What else do you
Perfect.
Need?
Perfect.
I know. What else could you want?
3-minute show. Great.
Well, what kind of 30-minute show do you have for us tonight?
We're usually a little bit longer. I'm just going to put it out there, but whatever.
Oh, sorry. It would be 30 minutes if I didn't interrupt you 400 times.
No, it's okay. I like the interruptions. Otherwise, I feel like I'm just reading to myself.
Mm.
If I wanted a fucking simple one-person narration podcast, I would have that. Let's be real.
Sure.
True. You bring the vibe.
All right, well, glad to be here.
Okay. Jesus Christ. We need to get here. God, there was something I was going to ask.
You had a segue.
No, I didn't have a segue. No, I did actually. No, I did have a segue. I think I've asked you this already. I think I know your favorite Christmas movie.
Okay.
Is it Dolly Parton's Christmas?
No, but it is it's a family favorite.
Okay.
Not Dolly Parton's Christmas. Hold on. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Smoky Mountain Christmas.
Smoky Mountain Christmas. Does it have Dolly Parton in it?
Yes. Okay. She is the main bitch. She is an angel. She is a hot angel. Diva.
Have you ever been to Dollywood?
No.
You should go.
My family has been to Dollywood. I have not been to Dollywood.
But have you not been, though?
I didn't go with them.
Oh.
Like my sister and her family, I guess. Is
Got it.
I mean.
Okay.
Not like my
I see what you're saying.
Immediate family.
I can go with you.
Please, love.
Listen. That could be part of our spooky and kooky road trip we talked about a year ago.
We really do need to do
like an East Coast.
Like a late summer, early fall road trip up over there.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. I have to go to Dollywood. Looks fun.
So fun.
Yeah.
Agreed. I also love the one with Tim Allen where he's a Santa Claus. It's called Santa Claus. My second favorite.
I watched that a couple years ago. Not my vibe.
You've never seen it before
Well, it's too late
to watch any of these movies for the first time as an adult. My God, it's not the nostalgia.
Maybe I think it's like the jokes were not hitting, perhaps, for me.
Okay, all right. Well, what about the Jonathan Taylor Thomas one, I'll Be Home for Christmas? Jessica Biel?
I thought that was Jingle All the Way.
Mm-mm.
Oh. I don't know if I've ever seen that.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Because at the end, they've got that NSYNC song. I hope this is a Christmas episode.
This is. Yeah, no, that's why I asked you. Merry Christmas. Where that's from?
Happy Holidays.
Okay.
That is from that movie.
I used to have a huge crush on Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Please. Who did not?
Right. Peak 90s crush.
The hair, the skin, so right? Olive and silky.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, the snarky ass sense of humor.
I know, right? I think that really, that was like almost like OG Ryan Reynolds.
We do. Yes. The Seth Green. Mm-hmm. That kind of snarky.
Matthew Lillard.
Yes. All of those snarky bitches.
Yeah.
Because
it's someone that you could banter with and could dish it out and take it in a way that you would like, I think, for me personally.
Right. And you mean not toxically.
Not toxically. Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, it's someone like, it's like a fun, stupid.
That was the whole thing.
Yeah. That's the vibe.
Just give each other shit. That's what we did.
Yeah. The flirt to roast ratio has to be good.
Honestly, mostly they're shitting on you. Now we would call it negging.
Right. Yeah. Maybe a little bit.
A man could be nicer to you. However.
But yeah, it's like in a non-toxic way. I don't know how to explain it.
Interesting.
Like it's a flirt to roast, I think. Like, it's kind of making fun of the stupid things you like, but also not making fun of you for, I don't know, like your weight or like how you eat or like.
It is important that they're not actually a dick to you.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Love that's what I mean. JTT.
Yeah, fan. JTT. We are stans.
Why are we talking about my favorite Christmas movie? What's your favorite Christmas movie?
I was hoping to ask. So my favorite Christmas movie is Scrooged with Bill Murray.
I know that. And I actually haven't seen it, but I know that's your favorite.
It is my favorite. It's because of the snark and the sarcasm that is very prevalent in that movie.
Yeah. He's good at that.
He's really good at that. I would
say. And likable still.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, very much. You're still rooting for him, even though he is a dick.
Yes.
In the entirety of that movie. But obviously Scrooged is a retelling of a Christmas Carol.
Correct.
Ebenezer Scrooge, the classic Victorian ghost story.
About a cunty man.
We need some ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future to go visit some fucking people in this day and age. Let's be real. But because that is set in Victorian England, that is my segue to our episode.
Where the fuck is that? The Scrooge?
Yeah.
Was he in Victorian England?
Oh my God. No. A Christmas Carol is set in Victorian England. And it was all right.
So your favorite movie is Scrooged. And here we go. Okay.
You didn't connect those dots. I try to connect them for you. But yes. Okay. Let me just get into it. In Victorian England, Christmas just wasn't a season of warmth and celebration. It was also the ideal time for ghost stories. Long winter nights, damp fog, dim gas lamps, and glowing fireplaces created the perfect atmosphere for tales of spirits and the uncanny. Before electricity, the deep shadows in every room made the imagination sharper. And for families gathered indoors, storytelling became a ritual of the season. Yeah. See the mood lighting?
I do. I'm with you.
Victorian society was also fascinated by the supernatural.
God, I'm not wearing my wig, but I feel like I should.
Wrong era, but yeah, close.
It's not the right era?
No.
They didn't have wigs like this?
Not during the Victorian era.
What did their hair look like?
I don't think they wore wigs during the Victorian era.
I thought this was Victorian era.
I don't think so. And when we're talking about a wig that no one knows about.
It's a Marie Antoinette wig.
It's a Marie Antoinette wig.
Is that not Victorian era?
No, I don't think so. I think Victoria era was after Marie Antoinette.
Really?
Yes.
Because that's before?
That's French Revolution. That's like the 1500s. I think Victorian era was the 1800s.
Is it because it's so tall? I don't think like men were wearing like wigs, like when they signed the Declaration and all that, they were wearing these funky wigs.
Yeah.
All of our presidents.
A different type of wig.
I mean, different but same. It's a different shape. It's like white, listen, curly.
I can't tell you fucking wig history because I don't know. All I know is I don't think that's correct.
Okay, sorry. Then I won't put on my fucking very Victorian era wig right now while you're telling me this story.
I'm going to prove you wrong later on this podcast.
Okay.
All in right, Google. Thank you. I'm sorry. Okay. So spiritualism, seances, and the desire to communicate with the dead swept through parlors and drawing rooms.
Ooh, fun.
Death was familiar and ever-present, and ghost stories became a way to explore grief, fear, morality, and the lingering weight of the past. Literature supported this trend, with magazines publishing special Christmas ghost issues in authors like Charles Dickens, Elizabeth Gaskell, and M.R. James, turning winter into the stage for some of their best supernatural fiction. A Christmas Carol may be the most famous example, but it was the one of many stories Victorians expected to read or hear every holiday season. I wrote so much. Okay. For them, telling ghost stories on Christmas Eve wasn't unusual. It was tradition. Families would dim the lamps, settle near the fire, and trade eerie tales as part of the holiday emotional rhythm. Christmas was a time of memory and reflection, and ghost stories made that reflection vivid, haunting, and strangely comforting. The cultural backdrop is what allowed two of the most enduring Christmas ghost stories to take root. One is a tragic legend repeated across English estates for centuries, and the other is tied to a real house in some of the most famous ghost settings in the world. Together, The Mistletoe Bride and The Brown Lady of Raynham Hall capture the Victorian blend of melancholy, mystery, and the winter supernaturalism that defined the era's storytelling. So we're doing like Victorian ghost stories during Christmas time.
Okay.
Very weirdly specific. But like, why the fuck not?
Please.
I need to take a drink after that. Jesus, that was four paragraphs.
Are you writing those? You're not using AI. Those are your words from your brain. Yeah. It's rhythmic and like,
I get used to it. I don't know. You're just like banging out after a while.
It's very creative.
Thank you. Thank you. I try very hard.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that wouldn't come out of my mouth or I wouldn't type that out. Like it. No.
Yeah. I don't know. You just get you better feel
like
at
you're,
it.
You're getting. Okay.
Yeah. I think, I wasn't doing that for the first 35 episodes.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into The Mistletoe Bride.
Okay.
So the story of The Mistletoe Bride has circulated in England since at least the early 1800s.
Okay.
Which is why that is not the correct wig.
Well, when is that wig from?
Because the French Revolution was in during the 1600s.
Chic. Work. I don't know what to say.
Like, chic. The story of The Mistletoe Bride has circulated England since at least the 1800s. Though its setting shifts across various estates, most commonly the Bramshill House in Hampshire, the Marwall Hall, and occasionally the Minister Lovell Hall in Oxfordshire.
The names.
The names. Jesus. Okay.
These Brits are long-winded.
So many syllables. So regardless of the location assigned, the legend follows the same story, which goes like this. A young bride, newly married during a Christmas celebration.
Cute.
Joins her guests and a new husband in a festive game of hide and seek.
Oh my God. Okay. It's spooky already.
I'm thinking of Ready or Not. Do you watch that?
Yes. Oh my God, you're right. It's exactly that.
It's exactly that. The bride, seeking the perfect hiding place to outsmart her groom and her guests, chooses an ornate wooden chest or trunk stored in an upstairs room or a dusty attic space. That's how the story goes. In some versions, the chest belonged to a long-deceased ancestor. In others, it was rarely opened and used in general.
Okay.
When she climbs in, the heavy lid falls shut and the locking mechanism snaps. I would never do this.
This is a very destination.
Very final destination. I'm way too fucking claustrophobic in general. No, thank you.
Okay. I could do this. This wouldn't totally bother me.
Oh,
if
really?
It fucking slammed shut and locked, I would be immediately freaked out. But I could get in there and lock myself in. Mm-mm. I would be breathing heavy and really struggling to contain myself, but I could do it.
I would never do it. Not even like I wouldn't. Oh, no, no.
Well, I don't like to go hiking because of the heights. So
this is true. We all have our fears, right? Mm-hmm. No one hears her cries over the noise of the music, dancing, and the merriment of the wedding downstairs. Oh God, her locked. Reception, her own reception. So when the groom cannot find her, the party shifts from laughter to concern and eventually to frantic in Good. Searching for yes. the bride herself.
The bride should be somewhere that everyone right. can see her at we all times. Someone can see her at all
right.
times.
We were playing hide and go seek, having fun, and now she's fucking gone. Right. Mm. No, thank you. So after hours, sometimes days, the hunt is abandoned, leaving everyone with the question of what happened to the bride.
I'm sorry, they didn't find her in the... Mm-mm. They can't hear her screaming?
Years later.
No.
The chest is finally opened again, revealing the skeletal remains of the bride still wearing her wedding dress, clutching the mistletoe she'd held during her ceremony of her wedding.
Dude.
That is a spooky, spooky scary.
I wonder where that came from. That
I don't know. Yeah.
Be terrified on your wedding night, ladies.
Don't fucking hide the chest, girl.
Because someone probably did.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, someone probably got murdered.
Maybe.
Once upon a time.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a very Agatha Christie.
They're just like, beware of chests from now on.
Yeah, totally. So her body is found curled in a position that suggests she fought for air until the very end.
How terrible.
That is one of the worst the ways.
This is why people are claustrophobic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Although the story's factual origin is a stretch and impossible to pin down, like I've said, sightings and eerie experiences have been reported for decades at Bramshaw House. One of the places that was said to be the origin of the story. And this is the place that's most commonly associated with this tale.
Okay.
We'll just go there. Visitors there have claimed to see a woman in white or a pale gown gliding near the main staircase of the house. Some staff members reported unexplained cold pockets or faint sobbing heard.
Oh.
Along with the sensation of being watched near the gallery rooms where the chest once was at.
Yeah, you probably are being watched by cameras because they don't want you to touch it.
Maybe now. I think this is before.
Oh.
Yeah. This I'm is Victorian sad. Era.
I just.
Ghost stories.
I don't want her. I hate the idea of someone being like accidentally murdered if we're calling it an accidental. Oh, she locked herself in there.
Yeah.
It was an accident. I thought she would just be trapped there in that house.
Yeah.
What is that? Murder house.
I think it's a murder. Oh, like Murder House of American Horror Story?
Yes.
Got it. I was like, Murder House.
Like there, but I don't like the idea.
That is
like,
crazy. It's a crazy concept.
I don't think you stay. I think you move on.
I think some.
But I do think that. Okay, I'm getting weird.
No. Fucking go down that rabbit hole, bitch.
I can't. I don't care. Sometimes I say too much. I think that time is different than we observe it.
Mm-hmm.
And that everything that is happening is probably happening simultaneously or simultaneously-ish. And we just perceive it.
As ghosts.
Differently.
So
it could be like layers of things that sometimes if you're some people are more sensitive to or maybe you in any particular moment could be more sensitive to like the collapsion of time and space and that like maybe we're seeing imprints.
Yeah.
But I don't think like a human soul. I hate the idea that like we die and then our soul just like stays where the shitty thing happened. Absolutely not.
I don't know. I think it depends on like the thing that happened.
Maybe, but I don't like that either. Because I refuse.
I feel like most ghost stories kind of originate from something
possible.
Very violent or tragic or, you know, something. It's different like a good thing, right? Like it's usually something very sudden.
Could be.
And, like,
although,
maybe...
but like what about the guy that just like lives in the house that like smokes still? The dead guy in the rocking chair. I don't know.
What are you talking about?
I'm not talking about something specific. I'm just like the ghost of...
I was trying to be like...
I'm just like the ghost is usually just like some... Okay, I mean, so that, people that smell be, cigarette smoke.
That or, could be more... I think the theory you're talking about is the stone tape theory.
Okay.
Where it's just like a energy or a spirit kind of replaying the same like...
Image or that image, moment.
Yeah,
like a
over
movie,
and over and over. Like it's not imprint. Really like an actual, it's like an imprint of energy. It's and not necessarily a spirit.
Okay, sure, fine.
There's multiple theories. I do think a lot of it is maybe there is like some weird timeline shit that we just kind of cross paths every once in a while.
Yeah.
And okay. Like, yeah, I think there's a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I don't think it's one thing in particular. I think it's a lot of other like little things that we're all like witness and occur.
Totally.
Because like, why would it just be one thing?
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
There's not one explanation, I think, for ghosts or spirits.
I just like, hate the
spirits.
Idea that someone could be stuck reliving something terrible.
Right, yeah. I mean, she just seems to be walking around.
But I don't know. It's not like she's like still
with her gown. Why is she stomping? Like, I imagine she's like walking so fast that her gown is dragging.
Yeah, yeah, her. Like a pill gown. Yeah, she's like kind of gliding around.
I guess she could be dancing.
Yeah.
Maybe. Okay, fine.
Maybe she's like reliving her wedding day over and over, which I guess maybe isn't the bad thing.
Right before it all went to shit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. Yeah. All right, could be cute.
So one former occupant of the hall described hearing soft scratching sounds from a closed storage room during the winter months, especially around Christmas, which locals connected to the legend of the mistletoe bride. Others claim that during Christmas gatherings in the 1800s, certain guests refused to stay in rooms near the infamous bridal chest located near the rooms, and they would hear footsteps pacing when there was no one upstairs.
Pacing.
Pacing. See, pacing is a little bit more
specific. That's what I'm like, why?
Specific. I don't like that. Although the story likely evolved through oral tradition, ballads, and Victorian fascination with tragic feminine ghosts, there's always a lady in white, right? The emotional core makes it endure. A young bride who died terrified and alone on what should have been the happiest day of her life. Mm. It's a very classic Victorian tale.
Oh.
So unlike the mistletoe bride, whose story is more folklore than fact, the Brown Lady of Rhinemond Hall is tied to a real English estate in a real historical figure.
Hmm.
And documented reports spanning centuries. Her tale moves us from hopefully imagined tragedy to real paranormal investigations, eyewitness testimony, and one of the most debated ghost photographs in history, which I will show you, which is the Brown Lady of Rhinemond Hall in England.
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't know why I paused.
I assumed so.
Yeah, yeah. So the Brown Lady is widely believed to be the ghost of Lady Dorothy Walpole. And she is the sister of Britain's first prime minister. Oh my God.
Hey, you know what?
She is the sister of Britain's first prime minister, Robert Walpole. And this is a portrait of her.
Let me see this, diva. Why do they all look the same, Missy?
I kind of would like to have someone like paint a Victorian picture of me to see if I look like that.
Okay, because she looks great. Mm-hmm. But they all do have like full pink lips. It's very kind of bulbous nose and huge eyes, and they're extremely pale.
Always, I think.
But it like must have been the style at the
being
time.
Being pale during this era was a good thing.
I guess so.
Because if you were pale, that means you didn't have to work in the fields. That's like the whole thing, right?
Do they all have those enormous eyeballs? And I feel like
it always must the be dimpled like, chin, too.
Yes.
The dimpled chin.
Yes. It's very, everything's round and soft curves.
Yes. I mean, that's probably a little bit like artistic interpretation, but style. It definitely feels how a woman should be painted like now, during this era.
Everyone's very linear.
Sculpted.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm, very sculpted, not soft and round, right?
No.
So Dorothy married a Charles Townsend, a wealthy but controlling aristocrat who owned Rhinemond Hall.
Okay.
It's Rhinemond, right? Yes, Rhinemond. Rhinemond.
Beautiful. You did it fantastic the first time. Nailed it.
So he's... lack of a better word, a dickhead. He's controlling, he's abusive, he's not a good guy.
Ooh, we don't like that. Okay.
So, according to family accounts and later retellings of the story, Charles suspected Dorothy of infidelity.
Of course.
But, like, they were both cheating on each other.
Were they?
Yeah.
Wait, she was cheating on him?
Yeah. Oh. But, like, they're both, like, fucking other people.
Right. I don't think it counts.
It's kind of the era, right?
Like, I don't think it counts if you're both doing it.
Yeah. And I think it's just kind of... like, you don't get married for love in this era, really. It's like these people got married for power.
It's a business arrangement.
It's a business arrangement, yeah.
Okay, fine.
So Charles is like, she is being unfaithful, even though he's also being unfaithful. And he also is not cool with her having previous friendships with people that she had also been romantically involved with.
Now that, I think, is reasonable.
I don't know.
You don't?
I don't know. I think it depends on the person how long, like, you've been separated. From each other.
He already thinks she's a cheater.
But he's a cheater too. He's projecting.
Yeah. I don't think he's right. I'm just saying if he's right about anything.
So in response to this, you know, suspicion, sorry. I didn't write that in. So in response to this suspicion, he allegedly confronted her within Rhinemond Hall. Mm. And he basically was like, I think you're cheating on me. And he's, I think you're basically just a two-time.
Oh, God.
You know, right? That's even though he was also doing the same thing. Yeah, very dramatic. And he restricts her interactions with other people. and limits her movements inside the estate itself.
I hope she was, though, because if she's going to be, like, a prisoner.
Mm-hmm. He basically makes her a prisoner inside the estate.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Dorothy lived under virtual house arrest until her death in 1726.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
How many years was that? Many years?
It's many years. It's not. There's never really a specific number, unfortunately.
Oh my God! She evidently
was under, like, basically house arrest. So she reportedly died from smallpox.
She was like, "This is a blessing."
But there have been some versions of the story that implied that the illness was worsened or even caused by the isolation itself.
Oh.
Or that maybe Charles had something to do with her death in general.
Oh my God!
So it's a little bit up in the air.
Jesus.
So after her death...
Talk about toxic.
I know, right? After her death, stories began circulating that her spirit remained in the house. Dressed in a brown brocade gown she was known for wearing in her life. It's like one of her favorite dresses.
Mm.
So the Brownlee's image has appeared repeatedly in written accounts by guests and staff. One of the earliest recording sightings came from a visitor who was one of Charles' guests, actually, in the early 1800s. So probably about, I don't know, 50 years after.
Mm.
And then, so it says Charles. I think they maybe had a son that was also named Charles.
I'm like, what is he like?
I think they had a son also named Charles. So it's kind of like a little bit of everyone's name, Charles or fucking James, in this story.
Totally.
So I think it might have been like one of the guests of their kids who inherited the estate.
Okay.
So one of their visitors claimed a woman in brown drifted past him as he climbed up a staircase.
Maybe.
And her face was pale and melancholy, and her eyes were hollow.
Oh, wow.
So another visitor described seeing her figure, the woman in brown, in a bedroom, only for her to vanish into a wall.
Listen, if she had been cooped up in that place for 30 years, actually kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, she'd be there occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Okay.
So a Captain Frederick Marat, a novelist and officer in the Royal Navy, claims to have witnessed a lady in brown, and he writes on his experience firsthand in 1832. According to his testimony, he encountered the lady in brown carrying a lantern in one hand, and startled, he fired a pistol at her.
Oh! He was scared enough of what he saw that he shot at it.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And it sounds like he was kind of thinking that it was all a hoax.
Okay, so he was
like... And that these were like smugglers trying to come in and steal stuff, and so he was like, I'm gonna capture one of these people.
Okay.
He's like, I'm just going to shoot his fucking smuggler, I guess. And that's why he decided to.
So he went in knowing that something would be haunted.
Mm-hmm. He asked specifically to stay in the rooms where these hauntings were happening.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm less likely to believe him now.
No, he didn't think they were. It was a true story. He thought it was a ghost story to cover for smugglers.
Right. And then when he saw something.
Then he was like, I'm going to shoot it because I think it's a person. It's a smuggler.
But he did see something.
He shot at it. He shot it through the face and the bullet just went through the face.
Damn.
And she was still there holding a lantern.
He was like, I'm a skeptic and I still see it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And like it said, like the bullet embedded itself into the wall beyond the person that he shot. Because there's nothing there. So servants and workers at Ryman Hall frequently reported unusual drafts, footsteps, and a woodman's figure passing by mirrors without any corresponding body in the room, which is fucking creepy. Like, you just see something else pass by, and there's in a mirror, and there's no one else there. That's, I don't know, it's like, mirrors are creepy in that sense, especially like these big, vast estates like this, but, like, just seeing someone pass by a mirror and there's no one else there is spooky as hell.
Absolutely. I mean... Scared shitless.
Yeah, I don't know what I would do.
No, I don't like it at all.
I don't like it. So several servants refused to work alone in certain corridors during the winter months and around Christmas time when the woman in brown seemed to be more active.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So the most famous evidence tied to the woman in brown is a photograph taken in 1936 by Country Life magazine by two photographers.
Country Life magazine? Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they were photographing the grand staircase when one of the photographers reportedly saw a faint figure descending.
Mm.
And they like had the camera ready, and he instructed the other person, the other photographer, to take a quick picture. He's like, oh my God, take that picture right now. And when the plate was developed, the image revealed a translucent female figure draped in a flowing gown. And this is the photo they said to have captured. This is a pretty famous picture.
That's crazy.
I know.
It looks dark in the room. Is it just because it's like
1936 during the day?
Yeah.
They're putting like a bunch of lights on.
Yeah. It's a floating, definitely a floating figure.
Right?
Yes. Wow. Okay. Yes. It's spooky. I mean, that's fucking spooky as hell.
That is a pretty
top
fucking...
three spookiest photo, right?
Yeah.
It's everything. Yes.
Spooky, spooky photo.
Very.
So the photo was published in the magazine and quickly gained notoriety, obviously, because you just said, you're like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. So for decades since the publication, paranormal researchers and skeptics have debated its authenticity, which, I mean, you have to, right?
Please do.
Some claim it's the most convincing ghost photo ever captured. Others insist it made a double exposure or a photographic trick.
Okay.
So some people say because there's something about how the stairs are kind of highlighted that they're saying it's a double exposure. I don't know if that makes sense to me.
Well, okay, you might because of photography.
Right. Like, it could be I don't know how double exposures worked back then, but I feel like it would have been obvious. Like, it'd been obvious, like, do you all figure out if it was double exposure? Because you could just find the two negatives and or the two slides, right? And just
separate them.
But no one's been able to prove that.
Okay.
No one's been able to prove or disprove, I guess.
Whatever it is.
Yeah. That's, like, kind of my problem with people who are skeptics when it comes to, like, ghost stories or just, like, ghost evidence. They're always like, oh, well, like, you're faking it. Well, what do we have to do to convince you that this is real, right? There's always a reason to be like, oh, it's not real.
Yeah.
And there's a level of skepticism I appreciate, but there's also a level of skepticism, like, you just don't want to believe in it. And that's fine.
But you're never going
to get there. There's nothing ever going to happen to you, probably, that you would ever be like, this is a ghost or whatever, right? I mean,
unless it happened to them directly.
And maybe, I don't know. Or they could just be like, someone fucked with me or something, you know?
I don't know, maybe.
Regardless of its interpretation, or if it's true or not, the photo embedded the brown lady firmly into the ghost story history. It's famous because of
it's
this.
It's beautiful. Photo. Honestly, it's stunning. I want to frame it.
I know. It's cool as
fuck.
It's
a good photo.
It's a good photo.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it's real. I don't know if it's fake. I mean, like, you can almost, like,
make out features.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. It's good. Sorry. It's a fake. It's very good.
It's a good fake.
For a long time ago.
Some people said, like, maybe it was a, like, the Virgin Mary.
Okay, what would she be doing there?
I don't fucking know. I think because, like, maybe...
She'd be long gone. She's like, I already created Jesus. Leave me alone. I'm
or, like, a statue of the Virgin Mary.
Honestly, I am...
Like, can you guys stop putting me in your fucking narrative?
Like, I'm done. Like, I've been done.
You're like, listen, bitches. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
So both the Mistletoe Bride and the Brown Lady speak to themes that resonate deeply during winter. Loneliness, grief, confinement, unfulfilled promises, and the past's unwillingness to stay buried. Christmas, despite its celebration that we now associate with the season, is also a season of memory, a time when people reflect on the years behind them, and ghost stories amplify the emotional tensions of the season itself. The Mistletoe Bride embodies accidental tragedy and the echo of young life lost. Mm. The Brown Lady embodies sorrow and justice and the lingering spirit unable to rest. Together, they illustrate how Christmas ghost stories function both as entertainment and as a mirror for human fears themselves. These stories remind us that Christmas was never only about warmth and celebration. Historically, it's always had a darker side when the nights were long. The firelight flickered and the boundary between the living and the dead felt thin. The Mistletoe Bride and the Brown Lady endure, not just because they are frightening, but because they touch something human. A fear of isolation, a longing for justice, and the uneasy truth that some stories refuse to disappear.
It's so beautiful.
And that is a very short...
No, it didn't feel short.
But a couple little Victorian ghost stories.
Ah. Fantastic.
Christmas time.
Go off, divas.
Right? A couple haunt, divas.
Haunt these bitches.
I know, serious. Especially the fucking second one.
Very chic.
Right? Get your fucking man out of here. Haunt his ass. Listen, if you can't get even, if you can't get justice, haunt him.
Sure. Haunt him. Know what? Do you? Yes. If you want to, stress him. Make him stress.
Totally. Totally. That's what I got for you guys this week.
Well, Merry Christmas, everybody.
I know. That was better than last week. That, I mean, not better.
It was more festive.
More festive.
That's more, all right. Hey.
A little more Dickens-esque.
We're doing, listen, no notes. Peaches.
Some spooky Victorian ghost stories, which I'm all about.
Loved it.
I love a, like, dark, whimsy Christmas vibe. I don't want, like, this bright green and red shit. I want, like, deep tones and, like, firelight and candles.
I know.
I do wish, gothic sense, yeah. You know?
Yes. It would be nice occasionally to live by candlelight.
Yeah.
Just, like, we should do it, like, once a month, like, for our mental health.
Be holding a candle opera and, like,
if
a long
If the power could go out once a month, and we just had to,
for, like, 3 hours.
At 6 hours, maybe. Like, okay. After we've eaten dinner.
So then you're going to bed.
Yes. That doesn't work. Because if the power goes out before you have dinner, then what are you going to eat for dinner? You will starve.
You won't starve.
No.
In 6 hours?
You'll probably go to bed hungry. If it goes out at 4 p.m.
I think you're being a little bit dramatic.
I'm just saying, oh no, I can't turn the oven on.
You can make a goddamn sandwich.
But only if I have sandwich stuff.
Okay. You don't have fucking PB&J?
No, I don't. Yeah, or like bread? At all times? No, I'm one of those people that just, like, shops for every single meal they need. Maybe I'm shopping for two or three meals.
This is true. You are that person, for
like,
sure.
Like, who just has PB&J? Like, not even. If I had children, probably I would have PB&J.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm literally, if I can't go to the grocery store every, like, 2.5 days, mm-hmm. I don't know, I'm eating beans.
Beans of can.
Which would be a bummer if the power went out. That's the bummer.
Still survive.
That's why I would like the power to go out after I've eaten dinner. Mm-hmm. And then I just, like, oh, I have to unwind naturally.
It would be nice to be like a Victorian, like, house holding a fucking candelabra.
Yes.
And like a nightgown.
Agreed.
Like just walking the halls.
Well, oh, you mean if you could actually go back in time?
I mean, you could do that in real life. Here. Now.
I'm just saying, are you hungry in this scenario or not?
No, I'm not hungry.
I'm out of here.
I'm looking for the spookies.
I'm sorry. It's just, I don't care. This is a vibe.
It's a vibe.
I'm walking right now. Okay? I'm walking the halls.
I'm walking the halls of this haunted manor. I'm looking for the ghosts.
Ah,
in my long flowing gown.
Uh-huh. And you are stomping. You must be stomping around.
Maybe. I don't fucking know. Right, I'm just saying.
I want that for you.
Thank you. Create that.
I'm sure we can take you someplace where you can stay for the night.
Yeah, the mental asylum?
No. No. We just need to get on Airbnb.
That's a real, probably very fancy Airbnb, but I would totally be down.
Yeah, they're out there. Transylvanian. Fucking I don't know. Hold on. What? Serbia.
Serbia's not the right one.
Montenegro. I'm like, there's got to be castles.
Yeah. Scotland, Ireland.
Sure. Okay. I was thinking more like Baltic.
Oh.
Not.
Like Nova Scotia?
I don't think there are castles up there.
I don't know. We'll have to research. We'll come back to you guys. Let you know where the...
Our castle game.
Yeah.
Right? But you're right. They do definitely have them in Scotland and Ireland. They do.
We'll let you know
where I was thinking of a different type.
Okay. We'll let you know where these spooky castles are, where you can walk around in a Victorian gown holding a candelabra looking for ghosts.
You could do it in both places, technically.
Yeah. You could do it in your own house if you really wanted to. You could just pretend. But ghost hunting on the budget. Victorian on a budget.
You didn't have at least a hallway. That's the problem, is we have such open,
I know,
open concept homes.
Open concept ruin hallways for
There's
us.
No
God
hallways.
Damn it.
No.
We don't have grand staircases.
We do not.
No. Mm-mm. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for the story.
You're welcome.
Tell these people what to do.
You know what you should do? You should rate, you should review, and you should subscribe.
Literally, if you're even getting this far and you haven't done so, which has got to be like most of you.
I hope so.
Go fuck yourself.
It really, really does help the algorithm bring the pod to other people. So the thing is, I've looked at our conversions, or not conversions, I looked at our stats recently.
Oh, stats.
Ooh. Yeah. So most of the people that do listen to us then continue to listen to us. The problem is right now is we're not reaching enough people initially. So when you rate and review and you subscribe to us, it helps the algorithm push us to other people, and then more people will be interested because we catch the people when they actually listen. We need to find more people to listen to us.
Wow. If that makes sense. We're learning all that from stats.
Mm-hmm.
Stats, you know what? Dog. You're really doing it, bitch.
Thank you. But yeah, help us out. We would really appreciate it. That is our Christmas wish, dare I say.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But until next time.
Stay grimly curious. Thank you so much for listening. Music by Alex Kingston and Adam McKinnon.
For podcast photos and updates, follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Grimly Podcast.
Be sure to rate and review, and we will see you next week for another episode. Bye, bitch.